Oh, not another meditation episode, you say? I admit I was reluctant to record this talk, but man, I am glad I did. Like me, do you think meditation is boring? Can't find the time to meditate or do your deep breathing exercises? Are you just too dang busy to get anything done? Today on episode 138, Glenn and I talk with Jeff Patterson, martial arts expert and author of The Yielding Warrior. After spending decades earning the equivalent of black belts in multiple martial arts disciplines, and through teaching over 25,000 students in his martial arts academy, Jeff is a deep resource for anyone seeking to gain mastery over themselves. Do you ever feel scattered or anxious or fearful when you cannot get back to center? Ever have trouble focusing on work or a hard task that needs your full attention? Ever have trouble clearing your mind of thoughts so you can fall asleep? All right, let's talk to Jeff Patterson about the path to becoming masters of our own minds so we can get out of our own way to accomplish our goals in sport, in health, in life. Jeff Patterson, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Hello, nice to be here.
Hey, Jeff, looking forward to hearing what you have to say today.
Well, first of all, Jeff, I appreciate you making some time for us. I understand that you are a martial arts expert and the author of The Yielding Warrior. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you wouldn't start by just telling us a little bit about how did you develop this knowledge base that allowed you to, and then what motivated you to write this book, and what does it mean, The Yielding Warrior?
Yes, so I got turned on to the meditative arts in a bit of a roundabout way. I used to, as a younger guy, be very into Western boxing. And I actually used to go to a boxing gym just a few blocks down the street here from my academy. And at a boxing gym, I'm not really sure if you've ever been around one of those, but it's not like a regular class environment. And the way that it works is the coaches will all have maybe 3 to 5 fighters that they work with. And you go into the gym, you spend time with your coach, you look for sparring time, and you work out. Well, when I first started going there, there was one coach who I really wanted to get to notice me, and he had actually created national and world champion level fighters. And so I was really trying to get some time with him. So I'd always show up at the gym when I knew he was going to be there, and just try to show him how hard I wanted to work. And eventually, after following him around for about 3 or 4 months, he finally started paying a little bit of attention to me and giving me some pointers and helping me out a little bit. Well, it was only about 2 or 3 weeks of getting to spend some time with him, and he said something to me that changed my life forever. And that he said, you know, if you want to be a good boxer, you should really start doing Tai Chi and meditation. And here I am, this dumb 19-year-old kid that doesn't know much of anything. And, you know, I think about Tai Chi like old people in the park, and like, how is this going to help me be a better boxer, right? Yeah. And so I had a lot of respect for him, and I really wanted to spend more time with him. And so I started taking on the practice. And his desire was to see me practicing the meditative arts for an hour a day. And everything he gave me, I treated like it was gold. You know, I wanted to spend as much of my time and energy and really master it and get as good as I can because I really wanted to impress him. Well, so he told me to do an hour a day. I was doing an hour and a half every morning. I would do my ritual. I'd go down in the basement. I'd do my meditation, my Tai Chi practice. And 3 or 4 months goes by, and the only thing he showed me was the first couple movements of the form. And I'm starting to think, man, is this guy ever going to show me anything? Why am I doing this? You know, I'm doing this over and over again every day. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was to go to the boxing gym and have him ask me, hey, did you do your meditation today? And have to tell him no. So, you know, I did it every day religiously. And I could tell that, you know, he was aware that I was getting frustrated. And time went by and I kept doing my practice. And it wasn't until about the 7 or 8 month mark where I went down into my basement, I went to practice, and I looked up at the clock, and an hour and a half had gone by and it seemed like 15 minutes. And I was like, what just happened? That was so cool. And from that point on, I was hooked. And I, you know, I've been running this academy now for 30 years. I've had thousands of students come through the academy, and it's always fun taking a competitor to go do a competition in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA or Muay Thai or whatever it is. However, with the internal arts, what has been so great and special and rewarding is that the students that come into an internal art practice are often suffering with things like anxiety, depression, or stress management, or they're looking to improve their focus, whether it be in athletics or in just their performance and other things that they're doing. And those kinds of stories and transformations are always so much more rewarding than just teaching somebody to go out and, you know, win a fight. And so while they're both fun, that's kind of been my main passion and my main desire and why I've spent so much time putting together, you know, the last few books that I've written and this online program teaching people about the meditative arts.
Well, that's interesting. Let me ask you a question. You referred to the internal arts. I'm not sure if that is somehow distinct from the martial arts, but what did you mean by internal arts? I've never heard that combination of words before.
Yeah, so the martial arts, you know, at our academy, we have four adult programs. We have our Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program, our Muay Thai and Western boxing program, and our JKD and Eskrima program. Those would all be what I consider martial arts. Internal arts are more of the meditative arts. And when I talk about meditative arts, I mean things like sitting meditation, standing meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, Bagua, Xingyi, yoga, anything that has that meditative element to it. And as you're starting to build a meditative practice around your lifestyle, you want to incorporate things that are going to help you in any direction you're doing it for. You know, a lot of people come to the practice, you know, like I mentioned, whether they want to improve their performance or they want to improve their focus or their creativity. There's different practices that you can do within the meditative arts that will help you accomplish different things. And so the idea of building a meditative practice is learning how to take all these tools and use them strategically within your day and within your practice.
Okay, well, this is very interesting to me. And you didn't really tell me about the Yielding Warrior, but that's good because I want to table that for a second and come back to it. I really want to get into these internal arts and meditative arts that you're talking about. And I want to get back to your boxing story. How did figuring out how to make an hour and a half go by in 15 minutes help you to be a better boxer?
You know, there's so many ways that the meditative arts can help an athlete perform at more optimal levels. And one of the easiest things to think about is by doing the meditative arts, you become more in tune with yourself. And, you know, every athlete is probably more in tune than the average person when you talk about body mechanics and learning how to generate power and energy and these kinds of things. But the meditative arts kind of takes things to the next level. It teaches you how to really increase that awareness and find things that, you know, you mentioned tabling the Yielding Warrior. I think this is a good way right now to segue into yielding because it really relates to athletics in that yielding is a really powerful meditative concept. And there's three different kinds of yielding. There's physical yielding, mental yielding, and emotional yielding. Physical yielding we use in athletics and combat sports all the time. The idea of physical yielding is I push you, you push me, whoever's the bigger, stronger person with the most leverage eventually is going to push the other person over. But with yielding, instead of us trying to see who the bigger meathead is, when you push me, I get out of the way of that force. And now I can respond with less effort. So we're not trying to butt heads and see who the bigger meathead is. And now it gives me the ability to deal with somebody who is a lot bigger and stronger than me because I'm not just trying to overpower them. And we've been using this in martial arts for generations. It's used in any kind of contact athletic sport, and it's even used in strategy. This is an idea of what we call physical yielding. And now, in order to be good at physical yielding or to reach a high level in physical yielding, a lot of things have to come into play. You need to be well-rooted. The lower part of your body needs to be strong and flexible so you can change your central equilibrium without getting tight. The body has to be relaxed. The breath has to be calm, and the mind has to be present. It takes years and years to get to a high level of learning how to do this. However, from day one, you start learning how to see things more clearly inside yourself, which helps you find that expression not only in the things that you're doing, but it also opens up the door to see things in other people. And this is where, to me, where it really starts to get interesting, because now we're moving into what I call mental yielding. Say, for example, because of my increased awareness, I can see things in you or somebody else who I'm having a conversation with a little more detail. And maybe I say something that unsettles you and I pick up on it when it's very small. It's a lot easier to adjust the conversation and keep us in a happy place than if I'm not paying attention to that. And pretty soon I'm so far off track, you want to slap me upside the head. And so learning how to use yielding in all of your interactions is very powerful. You know, one, we're just being more considerate. And two, you're learning how to strategically get different outcomes with the least amount of resistance. And you can use this in relationships, in just general conversations, in sales, in negotiations, in so many different ways. And so it's a very powerful concept. Then, next, we move into what we call emotional yielding. And emotional yielding is very much like mental yielding, but it's with your own interpersonal conflicts. So you think about sometimes something will happen to us, and we might go down this path, and we might get an hour, a day, a week down that road and realize maybe that wasn't the best choice. But with yielding, if we could have taken a step back and noticed it before it gained too much momentum down that one path, it's a lot easier to evaluate our choices and maybe follow a different direction. And now, I've been explaining yielding for years. I've been running this academy for a long time. And oftentimes what I'll hear people say is, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I do that all the time. And I agree. I think everybody does this to some degree all the time. However, it's kind of like, you know, if you or I were to walk into a crime scene with a detective who's been on the job for 30 years, he would see things about that crime scene that, you know, at least I would have no clue of, was the series of events, the timeline, all of these things that were happening. The meditative arts helps us see things inside of ourselves and other people that the average person will never have any clue of and will be unable to recognize them when they happen. And that's what makes them so special. And that's kind of where all the true gold is at, right? You know, and it's kind of like in athletics. It's easy to take a disciplined athlete to get them to 85% of their potential. But taking that athlete to 90%, 95%, 97%, now you're talking about, you know, like the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, who are almost magical with what they do. It's very rare to see that level in athletics. Well, I feel with this kind of awareness that the only way you can get to that 95, 97% is with a meditative practice.
I wonder if some of the struggle that I personally have had with meditation, which I have the people who follow the podcast will know that I've spoken to a number of people about, you know, managing stress and even meditation and even alternatives to meditation because I just can't freaking meditate, that sort of thing. But part of, I think, what you just said explains some of the challenge, which is, you know, to take an untrained athlete and try to go to 97% all in one big jump, including, you know, how to be in touch with your mind, that's just too much. To get the full benefits of 20 years of meditation and expect to have it in your first session of meditation, it's too much. You can't get there. And so there's a path that you have to follow. And maybe this gets back to the answer to my question of how did the learning how to meditate make you a better boxer, that maybe it didn't help all that much at the beginning, but it set the stage for you to get to be as good as you are in the various things that you have done in the martial arts in your life. Would you say that that was true, or do you think it helped you right away?
In some aspects, it helped me right away, but it continues to offer benefits, you know, even after 36 years of training. I'm always learning and seeing things at a different level. As far as the immediate benefits, you know, kind of going back to that physical yielding, it teaches you how to be more aware of yourself. And so you can respond faster. You can be more in the moment. When you get distracted, it's easier to come back to focus. And all of those things are things, especially, you know, in boxing, you get distracted for half a second, you already got hit two times. You know, so you really got to be good at staying in the present moment. And meditation is something that really helps you find that space.
Yeah. What was it, Mike Tyson? He says, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face. So, yeah, you better figure out how to, you know, get settled pretty quick again. All right. Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure what direction we should take. I think I'll let you guide it here. As we try to thread a couple of needles here all at once, we've got this idea of, you know, stress management as kind of a thing that I think applies to everybody. And mental arts are a part of that. And why it would be helpful to touch on that. The other idea is this idea of, just like in physical activities, exercise, it's good for you to have stress, to stress your muscles, to stress your cardiovascular system, you know, even to be afraid and to have anxiety. It's good for you to have stress some of the time. And then you need to recover from that stress, and your body will adapt to that, and you'll get better at handling that sort of thing. And this is why exercise is good for you, as long as you have enough recovery and rest from the exercise. And so I'm wondering if maybe some of this idea of yielding doesn't have to do with that, where, you know, there's this yielding in the moment where the big guy who's maybe a little stronger than you is trying to push you out of the way. Well, you know, if you're quick on your feet, you can do a little judo on him and you can use his momentum against him. And by being smarter, you win. But then there's also kind of over time yielding, where you're allowing yourself to have the stress, but then allowing yourself to have the recovery. Am I off track on this?
No, and it brings up a kind of an interesting point that I would like to throw out there. And I think this is a really valuable lesson for anybody thinking to take on a meditative practice. You know, through the years, one of the most common things that I've heard people say is, I can't meditate because I can't quiet my mind. I get distracted too easy. So meditation isn't meant to be this thing where you reach nirvana and your mind is silent and you just drift off into a nowhere land. The idea of meditation is that, say you're doing a sitting meditation or a standing meditation for 20 minutes, your mind, and I don't care how advanced in meditation you are, is going to have thoughts that come through your mind, and you're going to get distracted, and some of them are going to be good thoughts and some of them are going to be bad thoughts. The idea of making the mind silent is next to impossible. The idea of meditation is every time you get distracted by one of those thoughts, you use your breath, you use your posture, you use the movement, if you're doing a movement meditation, to bring yourself back to center from that distraction. Now, say you're meditating for 20 minutes, you might have 50 repetitions of getting distracted and bringing yourself back to center. You do this every day for a year, 5 years, 10 years, you're going to get extremely good at taking those distractions and being off center and coming back to focus. Now think about, just like doing bench press. You know, if I go into the gym and I do one bench press, I'm not going to get very strong, but I keep going back and doing it. Eventually, I'm going to be lifting more weight, right? It's the same idea with meditation. is through this consistent practice and getting those repetitions of learning how to maintain that focus and come back to center, now you're almost unshakable, where no matter what you do, somebody throws you off center, they punch you in the head, they, you know, whatever it is, you know, or even just a, you know, something in life that happens that kind of throws you off center. You've had so much experience with bringing that back to focus that you can approach it from an educated standpoint and not letting your emotions get in the way and make poor decisions.
I've heard that before, that the having a quiet mind maybe happens if you've done it your whole life and you've gotten great at it and you're the best in the world. But for most people, a meditation is all about practicing having thoughts and not reacting to them, and then and letting them go and getting good at that, which is what you've been saying. And that is the skill that you develop, which is helpful for something I try to tell my children, which is that we're not born in control of our minds. We're just a part of our minds, and our minds rely on us to do certain functions like planning ahead and developing language to communicate with other people and understand what people are saying. And we have an important role for our brain as well. Our brain will listen to us, so we can say, oh, I'm never going to eat another one of those cookies. And we won't for, you know, 5 minutes or 5 days. But eventually, you know, if you're a human being, eventually you know what happens, right? You know, you have a bad day. Those cookies, somebody leave them out. You know, you're going to get one. You know, you can't help it. And so why is that? Well, it's because, you know, you're not really in control. You know, the rest of your brain is really in control, and it communicates with the rest of the body and with you with these, you know, commands, these chemical commands, and you experience them as emotions, and you can react to them immediately, or you can learn through whatever, maybe through meditation, to notice these things and let them go. You notice a hunger for a cookie, and you can notice that, and you can let it go. You don't have to react to it. It's easy to say that. It's good to know why we're trying to do it. And unfortunately, it's much easier to say that than to do the practice and develop the skill. I know. I've tried. I've tried things like using HRV biofeedback, because even though I don't get frustrated by my mind wandering, because I rationally know that that's actually the purpose of it, is to, my mind will wander, and it's the coming back to center, letting the thoughts go. It's just so boring. You know, I just can't bring myself to do it. But if it's instead I'm doing something like I'm watching my HRV over time while I'm doing deep breathing exercises, I'm at least getting some relaxation benefit out of that. And I've thought of that as sort of a bridge to where I then could be better at meditating. And I think I'm on the right path. I've started doing this at the beginning of this year, and I'm making good progress on that. My sleep is better. I don't feel as stressed as I was before. I'll admit that I'm still not meditating, but I would like to do that. So tell us about the book, and what does the book try to teach us?
Well, if we could just take a brief step back and kind of hit on something you just said first. Mm-hmm. Talking about the different practices and how to meditate, and you know, you mentioned how you hadn't felt like you were being successful. There's many different practices. What I would recommend for somebody that has a hard time sitting and trying to focus on the breath and do maybe more sedentary meditative practices is to maybe take on a movement meditation practice like Tai Chi or Qigong, or something where you're getting the body engaged and you're finding that deeper level of connection through the body and the movement. You know, with any kind of meditative practice, we focus on regulating the body, regulating the breath, regulating the mind, regulating the energy, and regulating the spirit. And when you're doing a meditative practice, I always recommend, you know, there's three different kinds of ways that we practice meditation and how you want to integrate it into your life. And that's through ritual practices, active practices, and philosophical practices. the ritual practice is something that you want to do every day, even if it's just 20 minutes. You know, the Dalai Lama once said that everybody should meditate for 20 minutes a day. Unless you're too busy, then you should meditate for an hour. And I love that because it's so true. You've got to have that time to connect with yourself. Now, if that time, and this is where I see a lot of people getting distracted, if you're doing your meditative ritual practice by watching a video or listening to an audio, you're thinking outside of the body. You're not really turning yourself inward and looking at all of the little things that are happening inside you physically and mentally. And so as a ritual practice, I would recommend not listening to audios or videos. However, that's a great way to learn new practices. You can learn through watching a video or an audio, but eventually you want to get to the point where you're not tethered to that. Then we have active practices, and active practices are things that you can do when you're walking down the street or standing in line at the grocery store. And we would like to incorporate these into the day as much as possible, because practicing the meditative arts is more meant to be a way of life and a lot less of a hobby that we do once or twice a week. And so we can use these tools to integrate every hour. Say you count out 10 breaths, or you do some spinal rotations, or you do a movement practice for 2 or 3 minutes, just to bring your awareness back into the body and into that present moment. In a combination of doing a ritual practice every day and doing some of these active practices throughout the day, and then also integrating some philosophical practices that can be intertwined into the ritual or the active practices, this is how we start to build an evolving meditative practice that we can use for so many different directions. And the other thing, when you're thinking about starting a meditative practice, or maybe you already have one, it shouldn't be the same today as it will be next year and in 5 years. A meditative practice is always evolving. And one of the things that I've really loved about the practice is that I'll often learn things from one of my meditation teachers and think that, oh, I got it. That makes a lot of sense. And then after practicing 2-3 years down the road, I'll realize, that's what he meant. You know, it'll finally, you know, it takes time to settle in and really understand what some of these things are doing and how to implement them.
Yeah. So, you know, always the criticism or frustration that I have with it is that that it's just so hard to develop these skills. I mean, I can develop the skill of throwing a ball, you know, to a guy running across a football field very quickly, you know. And as I mentioned before we started hitting recording, you know, if you measured me on all the pillars of health, I'm awesome at everything except for stress management. And why is that so hard? And to some extent, you just can't try harder at that one. You got to be smarter. Maybe you've got a way to be smarter.
So that's often something that I hear with the meditative arts. And part of it is just a little bit of misunderstanding, in that it doesn't take years and it doesn't take thousands of hours or retiring to a cave to be reaping the benefits of meditation. From the first day, you know, I've had, you know, people come into class and they'll be, wow, that felt great. You know, you're going to experience benefits from day one, just like you did when you first threw that ball. And you're not going to be, you know, the next Joe Montana after throwing the ball once. However, you know, you're going to know how to do it and you're going to get the enjoyment of throwing the ball. And there's a lot of meditative practices where you're going to do the first time and get a lot of enjoyment out of it and experience a lot of positivity from that experience. And so what I would recommend for somebody who's maybe feeling a little bit of frustration with what they've tried is to experience with some of the other disciplines in meditation and see how you could maybe integrate some practices that do resonate with you. And, you know, you do the first time and you're like, that felt good. I got something out of that. Maybe I want to dive a little bit more into that. And so for those of you out there that have been frustrated with that, realize that there's multiple different ways that you can integrate this practice into your life. And I would search for something that, you know, feels right to you and experiment a little bit and use that as an entry point to start building a life practice. And the other thing I think that's worth mentioning there is when you find that, the idea is consistency. And in any athletics, it's the same thing. You know, if you play soccer and you practice one day a week, you're never going to be in the MLS. Same thing with meditation. If you really want to get to high levels of focus, if you want to experience some of these deeper, more profound benefits, you've got to integrate it into your life. And that's why I feel it's so important to develop the lifestyle. And the great thing about the meditative arts that I really love is that you don't need to spend 3 hours a day meditating. You know, there's very simple things that you can integrate through a short ritual practice every day and doing some active practices. And by doing this, I guarantee you, and you know, I've seen this happen hundreds of times over, is that people that come into the academy and they listen to this and take this advice and they do their 20-minute ritual every day and they integrate some of these active practices and they can do that every day for a year, they'll do this for the rest of their life. And I would bet that's in the high 90 percentile, that the ones that are disciplined enough to get over that beginning hump and to kind of see that the benefits of how this can change their lives, that they're hooked and there's no reason why they would ever stop.
Well, give us some examples. What are these different ways that, you know, people can try that, you know, for people like me who have struggled with the classic sit in a comfortable chair in a quiet room and take deep breaths and notice your breaths in and out, you know, and it's like, okay, well, that actually felt good, but it's so boring, I can never bring myself to remember to do it again. You know, what are some other things that are maybe more physical, I think you had referred to earlier, that some people find give them some benefit right away, and which gives a motivation to keep going?
Yes, so there's many things. And so you could maybe take on a Tai Chi practice. You could do some Qigong work and work through movement Qigong practices. You know, Qigong is a very deep art. There's five different directions of the practice. You can study it for the martial or athletics, the philosophical side, the meditative side, the therapeutic side, the spiritual side. There's lots of different paths you can follow there. Taking on yoga, doing different yoga postures. There's walking meditation. There's standing meditation.
Let's get into walking. I think that walking meditation might be some. I've heard of this before, and connected to the walking is that you want to feel your body moving. Am I right about that? I don't know what that means exactly. Like I'm feeling my feet inside my shoes as they press down onto the ground and just noticing how that feels. Anyway, tell me about walking meditation.
Well, any movement practice is teaching you how to have a higher level of awareness and sensitivity. For example, if you go to pick up a glass of water, most people reach out, grab the glass of water, drink it, don't even think twice of it. There's actually thousands of things happening to pick up that glass of water. You're shifting your weight, you're turning your waist, there's all the little muscle groups in your forearm that are reaching and working in unison to pick up this water, right? Well, by doing a movement style meditation, whether it's walking, Qigong, Tai Chi, whatever it is, you're starting to be more in tune and more aware of all of the little subtle things that are going on. So rather than kind of the shotgun approach, you're starting to see things more clearly. And that sense of awareness is extremely important because it helps you deal with your frustration and it helps you see how to strategically guide things in a direction that is more positive rather than looking for the distraction.
So one thing that I used to do, and I regret that I have stopped doing it. It was when I moved, I lost the place that I was doing this, and there's not a good place here. But I think that's just a bad excuse. Here was what it was. When I would go for walks, I would walk backwards. You cannot just use your thousands of hours of walking that have, you know, developed these unconscious skills, and you can just walk without thinking about it. I can be having a conversation about the hardest topics in the world while I am walking forwards on stable ground. But when I'm walking backwards, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it hard because I am not any good at that. And I totally don't want to fall down and hurt myself. So what do you think about that?
Well, with walking meditation, you know, one of the things that we do often is we add things. For example, one thing you could do would be to connect the breath with the movement. So say like you pick up your back foot, you start the inhale, you move the foot through space, halfway through the step, you start the exhale, you place the foot down, you finish the exhale. And as you're doing this transition, your mind's starting to connect the movement with the breath. And eventually the breath starts carrying you through the movement. When that gets easy, you can start adding something else to the mix. You can start adding, I'm lifting up my foot, I'm moving my foot, I'm placing the foot down. Or maybe you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 as you're also thinking about the breath, thinking about moving the foot. And so you have these strategic things that you're doing to try to train the mind to be more focused while you're recognizing more things that are happening through the movement. And yes, you know, regular walking, it's relaxing to go walk through the park. But the difference between that and having a meditative intent to your walking would be to try to be more present and bring yourself internally into the body rather than thinking about, you know, if you're walking up a mountain and you're having to climb over boulders, it's hard to consider that a kind of a meditation because you're thinking about the exterior environment and you don't want to fall off a cliff. But when you're in a nice, comfortable room and you're walking back and forth and just trying to get deeper connection to your body, mind, and spirit, that is a way where you could use walking as a meditative practice.
Okay. Well, so I'm wondering if I'm not misunderstanding something here. So when I have I say I don't meditate. I do meditate to fall asleep. Anyway, maybe it's not a real meditation, but it's a kind of a meditation where I'm sort of concentrating on my breath. And I don't really have a lot of memory about it because I do it and, you know, and some very short amount of time goes by and I'm asleep and so I just don't remember much about doing it, but I do it every single night. And the idea was that I always thought was what was happening was that I was filling my mind with thinking about my breath. And so when I hear you talking about all the various things that you would have to, if you were really trying to notice everything going on while you were walking, it would be a lot that is easy for it to slip into the unconscious because you've done it so much. But if you wanted to make it conscious, what would really be happening is your mind would be filled with all of these noticings of what was happening. And so you could have nothing else coming into your mind. No work stress, you know, no money stress, no whatever, right? And so the benefit, for me, the benefit is I fall asleep faster. Another benefit could be that, like we talked about how stress is good for you, as long as you get to rest and recover from it, you'll adapt and get stronger. You know, this meditation where I'm forcing my mind to not think about these stressful things because it's filled with these other things, I'm getting a rest. I'm getting a little bit of a recovery. I'm letting my parasympathetic system kind of come to fore, and my blood pressure will go down and my heart rate will go down, and all of those kinds of things. But I'm not sure that that's what you're saying. Tell me, am I off track?
Well, not at all. So I think the breath is an essential tool that can be used in many ways. You know, you say you use it to fall asleep. When we have an understanding of how the breath works, we can use it strategically to get a lot of different outcomes. So, for example, in Chinese philosophy, they call the breath work balancing the kan and li, or the water and the fire. And so every time if you listen to somebody sleep, their natural breathing pattern is a longer inhale and a shorter exhale. And that's the body's natural way of bringing your conscious mind into your subconscious mind, which is where we are when we're sleeping and dreaming. So if we want to emulate some of these more water or yin approaches to meditation, which are very good for helping us fall asleep, which are very good for de-stressing us and taking anxiety out of our lives, we could incorporate more of these yin style breathing methods where we're lengthening the inhale, shortening the exhale, maybe putting a soft retention at the end of the inhale. And these things we can use strategically to get those kinds of outcomes. Then there's the yang side of the breath, where if you ever had to push your car, or you pick up something heavy, your natural instinct is to use the exhale side of the breath, put tension in the breath, and generate power. Now, we do this every day, right? And for different reasons. But through the meditative practice, we start seeing how to use this strategically. And now, say, for example, and we all do this, we go through emotional ups and downs throughout the day. Some people are like a roller coaster. Others of us are maybe a little more balanced. But when you see something come out of balance and start to get in an excited state, you can use the breath to have that be more settling. And if you see something start to get in a negative state, you can use the breath to bring you back up. And now you can find more balance and more focus throughout the day and throughout your life. And if you ever watch a lot of good athletes that are at a very high caliber, they're pretty even keel usually, especially when they're in the moment and unfocused. And this is one of the things that we can do to kind of integrate these breathing strategies to help get a little bit more of that balanced focus.
So maybe what you're saying is that you could have a lot of different objectives in using these internal arts. You don't have to just be using them to calm yourself or to go to sleep. You could do a lot of different things. And so exactly, what you're trying to do would determine how you do it.
Yeah. And that's why it's a lifestyle. You know, I've been studying this stuff for over 30 years and I'm still just a student. I'm nowhere near the master. You know, there is literally so much to learn from these arts, and that's what keeps it interesting and exciting for me. And not to mention that I've seen it help so many people, but it really is a deep practice. You know, all Chinese medicine is based off of Qigong theory, which is a form of meditation. And, you know, so all of these, you know, you could study your whole life into Chinese medicine and never, you know, be the master. And that's just one branch of Qigong. And there's five different branches in Qigong. And so it really is a deep practice.
So I guess if you're in a competition, then the Bruce Lee mind like water thing it makes sense. You know, be ready, you know, stay focused, be ready for whatever. But if you have a stressful life, you know, welcome to the real world, then what you're looking for out of these internal arts is a way to come down, to balance what the stresses that are sort of that naturally come through the fight to have enough time to do what you have to do and have some time left to do what you want to do and have enough money and have enough everything. But if you're on all the time, you're just going to break down. You know, if you go to the gym and you lift heavy weights every single day, you're never going to get stronger and you're going to get hurt. And the same thing with, you know, mental stress, emotional stress. You've got to find a way to come down and recover from that. And, you know, I guess sleep is a good way of doing that. But if your stress is now intruding in on your sleep, well, you're in trouble. You better find something that allows you to do that. And, anyway, so this is where I've been. I've always sort of had my eye on the, what, you know, meditation, I guess, is just a, you know, a term that I used, I think, just to refer to what you call, and I think I'm going to start using internal arts to just manage myself, to accomplish whatever it is that I'm after. And what I'm after right now is balancing out what I'm really great at, which is being stressed and being up and charged and trying really hard for things. And I'm not good at relaxing into things. And so, you know, these practices I think would be helpful to me.
And yes, you know, I think that, you know, as, you know, I think you and I maybe got or were in the same point at one time. You know, when I was younger and I was boxing, last thing I was thinking about was wanting to, you know, sit in a lotus position and breathe, right? Mm-hmm. I was a very hard charger. I loved to box. You know, it doesn't really get much more aggressive than that. And I think that a lot of the misconception of meditation is that it is a passive art. The strategy behind meditation or behind yielding is to not to give up, is to not to be passive, but it's to strategically get to the most beneficial outcome that you can see with the least amount of resistance and being smart enough to recognize how to get there. A lot of times, I know for myself, is I used to just fight through it and I didn't always take the smartest approach. It's a lot easier when you can step back and be aware of what's going on and how you're feeling and how other people are feeling and how to get to a certain winning point or a positive point without having to do so much struggle. And so that's how I think you become a great athlete, because yes, you still have that drive and you still have that positive energy that wants to be the best. But you get there in a more educated approach that allows you to perform at a higher level. And that's why, you know, you look at, you know, when Phil Jackson was coaching the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan was on the team, he used to have, these are the best basketball players in the world that won how many championships, and he used to have them doing meditation and Tai Chi. Now, that might tell you that there's something to this stuff, you know, and people are at the best of their game are looking to these practices to enhance and to take that from that 95% to that 96 or 97. These arts will help you get there.
Okay, you hit it. After all of the conversations I've had, you finally touched on the button that I needed someone to press. It is not passive. It is about being strategically smart to get what you're after. Yeah. Okay. I have it now. All right. Well, so I'm done. What else do you guys want to talk about? Because I got what I wanted out of this.
That's great. I mean, if we could have this conversation and one thing could be a positive change for you, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, this has been really good for me. Glenn, you are in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
They must like be the masters of some of this stuff in South Korea. What about you? Are you a master?
Well, you know, I love what you just did, because it's true. I think there's a misconception about the meditative arts. But, you know, the whole idea being that it's all about passivity and it's all about just, you know, trying to focus. And you know how it is, the more you try to focus, the more things come into your brain and just clutter it up. Scene. So that was fantastic. I appreciate that. But here, you know, there is a, I don't see it that often, but there is a practice here that I can tell because the way people respond to me and the people, they're very aware of their environment, much more so than I am. And I've noticed this now on the bicycle path of all places. I'm riding on the bike path and I don't want to ring my bell because, number one, they don't respond to it. Sometimes they do and they respond in a really bad way. But many times, they don't make any response whatsoever. But they just go and they move over as if they know I'm coming. And they just, I go by and I'm just like, How do they hear me? And I'm listening. I try to be really quiet.
So without the bell, they just moved over. They like somehow they sensed you.
Exactly. It's almost like this. They just like the rocket line. They go, shh, and it's like, wow, that was kind of weird. So I've noticed that. You know, the men and the women here are very much like anywhere else in the world. You have to meet people that are really in their discipline, like meeting an athlete, for example, versus meeting just a cyclist. There's a difference. And the same way I imagine there are people that really are disciplined about their meditative arts, and those are just, they might practice it, you know, very little, you know. Remember, the society here is Confucianism, Buddhism, and Christianity. Those are your three major religions. And Buddhism is really, and Confucianism is very big here, which you really have deep meditative practices in a lot of, especially Buddhism, for example. But I know, I'm no expert in this at all by any means.
Well, cool. All right. So, Jeff, I guess with a little time, we don't have much time left, but tell us about your book and who's it for, and then how could we find you and your book online?
Yeah. So the book is called The Yielding Warrior. Right now I'm doing a thing where if you're interested in reaching or getting the book, you could get it at theyieldingwarrior.com/book and get a free copy of that. Just pay for shipping and handling. You can also look into our online program at theyieldingwarrior.com and our teacher training program that we have there, as well as if you're ever in Portland, Oregon, feel free to look me up here at the Academy and come in for a live class.
Nice.
The book and the meditative practice, you know, I feel like is for anybody. If you're wanting to improve your focus, de-stress, improve your performance, and there's so many different applications for meditation, I feel like if everybody would just spend 20 minutes a day meditating, the world would be a way better place. And I think that, you know, if you can just make the commitment to be disciplined enough to do 20 minutes a day and integrate some active practices into your life, which really doesn't take too much. It just takes a little bit of a habit and getting used to it. You'll be very happy that you made that decision and reap a lot of benefits from your time.
Fantastic. I think this is good advice. And I'm going to share something that I love saying it because people hate it, but I think that it's really important. And it was from a podcast that I did earlier this year, and the advice was drive the speed limit. And people hate that. I hate that. But it's an active practice that you can do every single day as long as you're driving. And it's all about taking the stress out. Now, with a side benefit is maybe you're not going to die in a car accident, you know. But anyway, I think that's right. That we've got to find ways to add these internal arts into our lives every day and get better and stronger at them all the time. Consistency, as you said at the beginning. All right, Jeff, Glenn, you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was an honor to meet you guys.
Fantastic. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining our conversation with Jeff Patterson. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. You can find more information about Jeff in the show notes.